The 2021 Ford Bronco Sport is built for the next generation of adventure seekers. This 4x4 is compatible with any and every trip. Its features include 7 available goat modes to go over any type of terrain. It's also available with trail control and twin clutch rear drive unit to help get where you need to go. Head over to Ford.com to build and price your Ford Bronco Sport today. Built wow, built Ford proud.
This year, the first day back isn't just for kids. We're all going to have a first day back. Families, companies, the whole country. But we shouldn't go back to square one. Let's embrace the lessons of this past year and move forward. Make our health a priority. Spend more time with loved ones. And find everything you need at Kohl's, whether you're headed to the classroom, the office, or a gathering with friends. For kids heading back to school, Kohl's has the latest looks from top activewear brands like Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, and more, including backpacks. That's right, the kids will actually have to carry their books again, so make sure they look good doing it. For the grown-ups, Kohl's has the beauty must-haves and stylish accessories you'll want, because for those who have been working from home, the days of being seen only from the shoulders up are over. So go ahead, save on everything you and your family need to move forward at Kohl's or Kohl's.com today.
Matthew Knowles Impact is a production of iHeartRadio and Music World Entertainment Corporation. Welcome to Matthew Knowles Impact. I'm excited today. We have a special guest, started in Canada and then moved her way down to southern part of California. But I wanted to tell you, it was important to me that this show, Matthew Knowles Impact, has diversity and inclusion and different perspectives. Those perspectives that are uplifting and positive messages that impact your life as well as mine. So let me tell you about our guest today. So we sent her an email for her to send a bio. And I'm going to just read. She says, "You asked for a bio. I've lived a few different lives. Each a far jump from the last. But I now landed in a place where I found perhaps the most joy. So I'll give you a bio that captures my world as an artist." Isabel's career shifted from CEO of her own consulting firm to full-time artist with a direct result of some words of wisdom from her 96-year-old mother during her final hours in hospice in November of 2018. This is what her mother said. "I've thought a lot about what I would say to you when this day came. What I might say so you really hear me. How could I turn these last moments together into a gift? I have one important regret to share with you. It's not about what I did with my life. It's about what I didn't do. Over my entire lifetime, I always found an excuse not to fully pursue my gifts as an artist. Work, then family, then caring for your dad, then finally losing my eyesight. Always reasons that put my desire to create on the back burner. You have the same gift I had. I watched you shift it, just like I did. So after 96 years on earth, here's my best advice for you. Right now, use your gift, develop your talent, and work full time and let the world know what you can do. You're turning 60 this year. If you don't do this now, I mean right now, you never, never will." I want to first welcome Isabel Alessandra.
Thank you.
I tell you, that is so touching to me. To hear your mother at 96 years old tell you that story.
You know, I'm usually the one that tells that story, and I can do it now, but I'm a little emotional hearing someone else tell it, I have to tell you.
And you should be.
Yeah. It's such a gift. It was more than art. She was telling me to make time to feed my soul. And, you know, I felt it. And I still feel her right now. It just was about reacquainting myself, or maybe even introducing myself to something that would completely engage me. Not what someone thought I should do, or not marching to like a different drum, but my own. And wow, I mean, what an amazing thing. And since then, I mean, I've always been super inspired. I'm a really positive soul, not afraid of risk at all. I've always known that inspiration comes from feeling alive, but I'm learning that you can deliberately create moments, whether they're walking outside or looking at a leaf or whatever, where you're so present. And that's my mom's gift to me. It's really something.
Your mother left you with an amazing gift. She's giving us a gift right now. I read what she said. If you don't do this now, I mean right now, you never will. And often we keep putting off those important things in our life. Your mother was giving you a sense of urgency.
Yeah, I'm on the back end now. You know, I mean, who knows what science will do, but we can talk about this later. But I'm also a cancer survivor. And I'm so aware of how short life is. If this was a video, I would have my fingers pretty much together in terms of how much is left. It feels so fleeting, and I feel a sense of responsibility to our creator, to the universe, you know, to me, to make it count. It's fleeting. And I think this last year of the pandemic, when we faced crisis in different ways and fears and all of it, you know, I was so lucky. I was creating. I mean, I was just one of the luckiest. Last year was a great year. I want to tell you, it was a great year. But I was cocooning too, but I was feeding my soul, and I would meet people or talk with them. I wasn't meeting anyone, but, you know, Zoom with them. And I felt this gift I had, this presence of saying, okay, the time isn't great right now, but it is our time. This is what I have. What am I going to do with it? I am not kidding. I really do talk that way. And so when I talk about, you know, going outside and watching a caterpillar or hearing the birds or whatever it is, those things that make us feel connected, those are real. That has so much to do with feeding your soul. And that's what I've been contemplating really over the last, more so since my mom died, really. You know, I've had other deaths in my life that I've seen and been with my dad, and I lost a very, very close boyfriend when I was young that sort of that turned my life around in a car accident. You make choices, you know, you decide when those things happen, you decide to go on and to use your time as best you can. And that's really what this was about. Although she did really want me to be an artist. There's no question about that. She wanted me to try. She saw me doing stuff and giving it away sometimes and puttering here and there, but she knew.
Well, Isabel, tell us a little bit more, because I'm a cancer survivor myself. A year and a half now, male chest cancer. Some people would call it breast cancer, but I choose to message it as male chest cancer. Mm-hmm. There was a period during the COVID that I had to call my therapist because I had this fear of dying from COVID. And I hadn't talked to him for a while, and he shared with me that in any crisis, whatever we bring to that crisis. So if we bring fear, we bring hate, we bring love, our relationships, it's multiplied times 25. So I was really, really, really freaked out that I was going to get COVID. And I had never come to grips with that I might die from my cancer. Yeah. I had never let that go, that fear that I had. So where are you in your process, and what is, you mind telling us what your cancer was?
I'm recovered 8 years now, and I had breast cancer, and it was an interesting find. I had in one breast, just time after time, of pretty significantly quickly growing lumps. And the last time I went in, all of them benign. One was a Fallot's tumor, very frightening because it was what killed my grandmother, but they found it. When I went in for the last biopsy, the guy who does the, I guess, not the pathologist, whoever it was that was doing these needle biopsies, he said, "I shouldn't know you. There's something wrong." And I said, I feel that too. And he said, "Pay attention to that." And then, you know, we went on and another benign tumor. And I walked into a doctor's office, the doctor's office I had then. And I said to her, I'm not confident that you got everything. I'm not confident in this diagnosis. And she kind of just blew me off. So I got on the internet and I started reading stories about trusting your intuition. And I thought, I know there's something here. I just feel it. So very supportive boyfriend, life partner, who spoke to me about this too and said, you know, you've been intuitive ever since I've known you and it's served you well. So I found a doctor here in Orange County, California, and she is an oncologist. And I got an appointment quickly. I spoke to her about what I was feeling. I said, I know that everything has been in my left breast. I know we've done images in my breast, in both breasts. I want a double mastectomy. And she's just like, she said, that's really radical. That's a big, big thing in a woman's life. And I said, I know that, but I'm telling you, I feel this in my core. And she looked me in the eyes and she said, you know, I've experienced this twice in my career. She said, let's book it. Let's do it as quickly as possible. When I woke up, she'd found cancer in my right breast, the one that everyone said was fine and everyone had been worried about the left one. So, okay, I got a chance. And it hadn't spread, but it was the kind that spreads. And it was this crazy gift.
So, you know, the irony of all of this is you and I are both breast cancer survivors. And it's all about early detection.
Yes.
Early detection is the key. I mean, this is amazing. I never knew where this interview was going to go. And I wanted the universe to give the power to let it go. I didn't know we were going to talk about health and wellness. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And here we are sharing the gift that your mother gave. Because when you think about breast cancer, and when your mother said, if you don't do this now, and I mean right now, you never will. And there's many listeners right now need to go and get a mammogram.
Yes, the healthcare providers are so careful with their masks. Things are very, very clean. It's the one place, you know, if we're buying groceries and we're wearing a mask and feeling safe, we can go in and get a mammogram where they are wiping everything down and being so careful. The yearly things, they are taking care of our instincts. They're reminding us that we need to do this kind of stuff all the time.
Thank you for sharing that. I had no idea. I'm walking down the popular street there in Laguna where a lot of art is being displayed, and I walk into your store, and there you are. And at first, I have to tell you, Isabel, at first, I was a little uncomfortable because you don't see a lot of Black people in Laguna Beach.
No, and here I
am with this white woman. She's by herself, and I'm walking in with a mask, and I'm saying, oh man, I hope I'm not scaring the hell out of her. Remember that?
I remember when you walked in and you sort of stopped. So now I know why you stopped.
I stopped because I wanted to know, should I keep walking or should I turn my butt around and say, what the hell, and walk out?
You stopped because my art was so awesome. It just floored you.
I tell you. So I'm there and I'm now talking to Isabel, and I tell her, I said, you know, Isabel, you know, my kids, Beyonce and Solange, they love art and they just look and stare. And I don't see the same thing. I just keep walking. What is wrong with me? Why don't I see art like that? And what did you tell me? You remember?
I said that you need to do what you feel. It's like music. I said it will speak to you and you'll know it the moment you see it. And whatever you see that you love is what you love. There's no right or wrong. It just is how it connects to you. And I remember saying, maybe your daughters could help you and your wife now again.
Your gallery. So I'm there in the gallery.
Yes.
And you tell me, and you actually told me, look around and what attracts you? And I go up to this painting and I said, and it must have been, I don't know, 30, 40 paintings in the gallery. And I walk up to this one and it turned out to be yours.
Yeah.
Out of all the paintings in the gallery, I had no idea that it was yours. I walked up. And it had those yellows and those warm, and it was amazing. I think I finally got it at that moment. It was a real moment for me to really, for the first time, see the appreciation of art, because I had never seen it that way before. But when you told me there's no right or wrong, look around this room, does anything appeal to you? That was amazing for me. And by the way, Isabel she currently works at the Sandstone Gallery in Laguna Beach, California. And also you work in the Gallery Sonia Monti in Paris, France. In a year.
Yeah.
How did you do this in a year?
Okay, well, I'm going to say two things. One, I came out of the gate brand new, fresh, with no preconceived notions, and had a really good teacher for 12 weeks in a Zoom class, or, you know, online during COVID, from a guy named Nicholas Wilton, Art to Life, which is a cool name. And I watched, because we were sharing work, many artists from around the world that were taking this online class. And some were so resistant because they'd learned so much and they were kind of unlearning some things. They needed to open the door to possibilities that meant change for them. It's all about new discovery. And I think I was also unleashing all of this stuff that has been built up in me. And it created this space for me. And I am really prolific. And I can hardly stand sitting here right now because my studio is upstairs in our house. And I love to paint. I get up every morning. I can, you know, transitioning from job where I worked, you know, very long hours because of the company, but I got up, I went to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and worked until whenever, but I got up, got ready, walked the dog, spent time together at breakfast, went to work. And then that hasn't changed for me. I get up, I do all those things, and I walk into the studio and I'm at work. Whether I feel like it or I don't feel like it, I get to work. And it comes. I mean, I'm there. I might do some quick sketches or warm up. I turn on the music because music is 100% of what I paint. So if I'm feeling like I need to kind of ease into something, it'll be slow. If I need a real kick, I'll put on something. I'll turn up the music and crank it up and go. But I work at it. You know, I work every day. I also spend real time marketing, probably 2 hours a day, thinking about Instagram posts, looking at algorithms in different countries.
You're a true entrepreneur. And I'm so happy that you're sharing this, Isabel, because what you're talking about is you found your passion and you live your passion every day. And I always say, when you live your passion, you never work a day in your life. You also gave examples to our listeners so that they can understand when someone lives their passion, what it's like. You get up, you go to work, you have music part of it. You work every day on your craft to get better at it. And a lot of people think that success just comes like microwave. bam. But it doesn't. You have to work at it each and every day. So thank you for sharing that. You know, something else you shared is that you got a PhD and in education policy and leadership and change from USC, and you used to teach at USC. Tell me about that.
Well, I started as a kindergarten teacher. I love children. I was a figure skater when I was growing up, and because everyone in Canada, it is true, either plays hockey or skates. It's really true. I mean, there's not much to do. I started teaching little kids skating when I was probably 12 or 13 years old, and I always knew I would be a teacher. I had a couple of good high school teachers. I grew up with people struggling to make a living. My dad had a tiny little store. He had a third grade education. My mom had an eighth grade education. And that wasn't so unusual for the people that I lived around. I knew I wanted to be a teacher, you know, but this art thing was there. And so anyway, I went. I went back into education after 6 months because I didn't even understand how people made a living as an artist. That I'd never even really heard about a professional artist in my whole entire life. And when I spoke to professors and the other kids, they all just sort of assumed that there would maybe be a place for them to land if it didn't quite work out. Well, not for me. That's not the way I was brought up. I had to take care of myself. And so I had this wonderful career, and I had great mentors all the way through. I was so lucky. Became a principal at a really young age of a school in a vouchered community. My school was mostly many, many First Nation, we say in Canada. Here it would be American Indian tribes. So we had a lot of Blackfoot and Cree kids from tribes in our school who lived reservation in the summer and came in and lived with their grandparents in the winter to go to school for a while. We did a lot of stuff in that school that caught the eye of educators all over the world because I had a great boss, again, great superintendent. So we had a lot of visitors, and one of the visitors was the dean of the School of Education at USC.
Let me ask you this, Isabel.
Yeah.
When you were working with those kids and I just felt your energy. Were they black and brown kids initially when you first told the story?
All kinds, really, black and brown and white. It was a really I know it was in Edmonton, Alberta, and it might seem like a difficult city, but it is, you know, poverty, no matter where it is, and it has the same impact on people. It's a desperate situation. And so I remember when I first went to the school, I had to be escorted in and out of the school with a police car out front because it was dangerous, you know, and I was young and blonde and white. Yeah, eventually we were so protected in the neighborhood and loved. But yeah, absolutely. The kids were all of color. Our plight, I'm going to use that word because the disease of alcoholism is a really prevalent thing with our Native American population. And so a lot of children came to us with fetal alcohol syndrome. And then there were a lot of children whose grandparents were raising them because mom or dad was on the street. We're on the street. We had pimps outside trying to pick up young girls at about 11, 12, that we, you know, we had a close relationship with the police. All that stuff exists.
Wow.
Yeah. And, wow. And it exists, you know, wherever there's real poverty. I mean, I've worked here in Los Angeles after I finished at USC. So I went to USC because of all the work we were doing. And then I ended up teaching there for a little bit. And then I went out into the world on my own. It's, you know, it's a different world, as you know, outside the university. It's a different world.
So what do we do about that in America? How do we change and effectively make change? I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
I mean, there is a partnership that's very strong and working with some good organizations. There are others that are funded that are not so good. You know, I'm just going to say it right now. It really depends. It's all about improving the quality of education for our children, and our parents all want to be good parents and offer real support, not just an idea. You had to be able to move from one place to another rapidly and not let anybody down. So the support system has to be strong, and it has to be authentic, and it has to include multiple places for people to build their confidence and assurance that they can do it I think almost everybody can. I only say almost because I think I've met occasionally people who just have fallen so far that it's such a big, long climb. Does it mean it's impossible? No, but it means it's a lot more intense. Helping people get in touch with what they love and then dedicating themselves to it, whether it be a child or a family, everybody wants something. I mean, but you need to connect. You need to connect. You cannot do it by yourself. You have to have support. It doesn't come by itself. You have to find people who can create a community of support.
Well, the important thing is that you just said is access.
Yeah.
Everyone should have the opportunity and right to access in America. And education becomes a big, large part. That's why I teach, to give back and to share. It's amazing because knowledge is power. And we have to continue to work on educational reforms as we look at the change in America. As we look at structural racism in America, education. And the other thing is poverty, because poverty is a major obstacle. When you're poor, there's a chance that you're probably going to lack in education.
Absolutely.
When you're not educated, then there's a chance that your work environment will not be equal to others. See, this thing of poverty, has ripple effects on people.
In every way. In every way. Health.
Then you get
the ability to eat properly. I mean, I've been around people sometimes who have said, you know, look how overweight that person is. It's hold on here. They're eating McDonald's. Whoa. You know, when you can feed your family for $6, and that's, you know, and you have $30 in the bank, maybe that seems to be a pretty good option. I mean, it's a real problem, you know, scarcity of food, the desert of even the grocery stores, the quality of grocery stores. If people haven't been into them, it's into a grocery store in a really impoverished neighborhood. I invite you to go in and look at the lettuce, or look at the quality. It's not the same everywhere. There are some places, of course, and there are some grocery store owners who are different, but typically you will see not the kind of food that you're used to eating. You don't see the nice fresh vegetables. You see stuff that typically grocery, I'm not kidding, would get rid of at the end of the day. You know, the whole thing is so interesting. Even access in a place like Los Angeles where there's no public transportation, when we're talking about getting mammograms, to navigate even the bus system, the transit system, to get to your appointment on time when you're working or when you have kids and when you have childcare and you have to get them to work. And a lot of times you're walking them to work or right now with immigration, you know, with people who are afraid to drive for fear of being pulled over, they will walk their kids to school for a long, long way, so that they can just get in and out of neighborhoods easily. It's an interesting thing. It poverty hits us in all kinds of ways, but it's not the end. I mean, I have worked with so many people and seen so many people continue on with their life once they have a hand to hold. And I'm talking about real support. I'm talking about giving people education, parenting training, how to even dress for interviews, all of those things that we take for granted that we think that other people should know. There's no way. If you've never had that modeled for you, it's all new information. And as soon as someone shows you, it makes sense.
Well, we do. And I'm here to tell you, lastly, as we wrap up, what I've seen happen here in America, Isabel, is when you look at poverty and you look at the white, black, brown, and other populations, but especially those three. When you look at poverty, also because of the lack of education, and with that perspectives change because lack of education, I don't know a lot of things. That's when also you fester racism. Racism is festered in poverty because most people don't realize in America, there's way more white people that are percentage and numbers in poverty than there are black. And so regardless, when you are in poverty, you will go and support a message because you don't understand the message and who's giving the message.
Or trust it.
Or trust it. And so what I've seen is when we heard this word base, it's my base. These were a lot of people that were in poverty, that wanted to have hope and belief, but didn't have enough knowledge to know that they were being led the wrong way.
Yeah.
So I thank you for this. I want to end this with something your mother said that you just did today for us. She'd be very proud of you. She said, use your gift, develop your talent, work full time to let the world know what you can do. I'm going to say that again. Use your gifts, develop your talent, and work full time to let the world know what you can do. And thank you for sharing cancer survivor, art, philanthropic efforts. Thank you for sharing that with us today. Thank you, Isabel.
Thank you very much.
Folks, you just heard from Isabel Alessandra. Don't leave. We will be right back with an entrepreneur that you will want to hear from. Have you ever been on an off-road adventure? One where you have to travel highways, dirt roads, and maybe even climb a few rocks. If this is the type of adventure you're seeking this year, the 2021 Ford Bronco Sport is the SUV that'll get you there. Thinking about taking up mountain biking or a new trail run, the Ford Bronco Sport was built with adventure seekers in mind. Pack up your things and hit the road in this 4x4 SUV. It has been created to help make your journeys easy and possible using the Haas suspension system, high performance off-road stability suspension system. Available off-road compatibility with available all-terrain tires. Available GOAT mode to help you go over any type of terrain. And available advanced 4x4 with a twin clutch rear drive unit. Head over to Ford.com to build and price your Ford Bronco Sport today. Built wild. Built Ford proud. Looking for timely news coverage? Peacock's got it. Whether you need the latest headlines or a daily debrief, you can find it all when you sign up. Check out the Peacock original news series, The Mehdi Hasan Show and Zerlina, streaming on the Choice Channel. Journalists Mehdi Hasan and Zerlina Maxwell go beyond the headlines with interviews and in-depth reporting. Stream exclusive new episodes daily. Plus, don't miss always on channels like NBC News Now and Today, all day, for instant information on the top stories happening now. Stay current on the latest in the entertainment, sports, business, and more with curated channels streaming 24/7. For all this coverage and more, go to PeacockTV.com to sign up today. And welcome. This is Matthew Knowles with Matthew Knowles Impact. And, you know, I'm really glad that we're getting more into a conversation on entrepreneurship. We had the opportunity to listen to Isabel tell her story. And now we have, let me just tell you a little bit. Celebrity caterer JoJo Davis, daughter of the famous St. Louis soul food restaurateur JT Brown, is bringing the original flavors of St. Louis to every home in America. affectionately known as Chef JoJo. She is recognized in the community as a top entrepreneur and nationally known restaurateur who developed more than 10 soul food establishments. Chef JoJo took the food scene by storm at just 19 years old when she opened her first restaurant. 7 restaurants and decades later, she is the CEO and founder of Chef JoJo Catering Company in Atlanta, which counts numerous celebrities among its loyal clientele. While the now Atlanta-based celebrity chef and entrepreneur has been cooking her way to the top for the past 25 years, she credits her success to time in the kitchen with her grandmother. Chef! Are you there? Chef JoJo. Is Chef JoJo in the house?
Listen, let me correct you though. I opened 7 restaurants. My dad had 10 restaurants and over 3 nightclubs. So I had my hand on 7 of my own. But
wow, how about
I managed
that?
The 10 restaurants of my dad.
What, in addition to the 7?
Yes.
So that's very important.
Yes.
So I can't wait to hear this entrepreneurship story.
Yes.
I like to start at the beginning because obviously there's a family lineage here of entrepreneurs. Give us a little background of your family.
Well, my dad, he started off with a bookstore in Kansas City, Missouri. And it opened when my mom was pregnant with me. So that bookstore that he had carried all African-American books. And Muhammad Ali, when he would come to Kansas City, he would come to the bookstore all the time. So then my uncle was in Atlanta, and he was one of the first to be the VP of Coca-Cola. And my grandfather opened up a sign company in Atlanta, and he would make the signs for the civil rights movement. So he did that in Atlanta and in St. Louis. So when my dad, he closed his bookstore, because my dad was a serial entrepreneur. When he closed his bookstore, he moved back to St. Louis with my mom. And then he opened up nightclubs, and then he started to open up the restaurants. I got into it at 13. We were from the age of a newborn to 4. We lived in the suburbs with my father and mother. But my father left when I was 4. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, no job. So we had to move with her parents, which stayed in the hood. So we were on the west side of St. Louis in a 2-bedroom apartment with us 3. I have 2 other siblings and my mother. So there was 4 people, and my grandmother had 12 kids. So of course it was a culture shock for me, my brother, and my sister. And my mother, she grew up like that, but you know, as a mother, you want your kids to see something different. And my mom hated it, but that's the only option that she had. She went to school to be a manicure. She went to cosmetology school. She didn't have a car. She traveled on a bus for 20 miles every day to go to school. We went to a school that was in the neighborhood. Because we come from the suburbs, we're with city kids, which we didn't think it was a different, but they looked at us because, you know, the shoes, College Bros, my mom had us in College Bros and the real long socks, and she had ponytails and ribbons in my hair. And I was bullied from that time up into grade school.
I wanted to touch on that for a minute. So you were, because normally when you have that environment going from one neighborhood, then to another neighborhood. In this case,
yes,
going to the hood.
Yep.
You know, typically somebody gets bullied.
Yep.
And so in your case, you got bullied. Why? Why did the kids bully you?
I hate to talk about it, but it's what we have to talk about, the colorism stuff. It was, they would call me the white horse. And they would say, you're the white horse. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm black too. But because they felt like I didn't look like them, but both my mother is black and my father is black. I just came out to be the lightest of my siblings. So I was really confused in the first grade and I didn't understand it. And then on top of that, I stuttered. So I was being bullied and I stuttered. So my mother ended up putting us in a private school, but it was still in the city and I was still bullied. So, but my mother made sure that they took me out of class every day to work on my stuttering because I couldn't get a word out. I couldn't say anything. And so, but she made sure it took a whole school year that they would take me out of school and I would go next door to the speech therapist and they worked with me every day for a whole school year and it went away.
So, you know, Chef Jojo, this is our first season of Matthew Knowles Impact. And what I've learned in this first season is that we can be miles apart, but yet so close together.
Yes.
To hear you talk about colorism, and we've talked about colorism on this show before, and it's your version is more reverse. We were talking more about people of lighter shades of black looking maybe down upon those that were of darker shade.
Yeah.
But your experience was just the opposite.
Yep.
And to hear that, and it just made me think about this whole season and how much I've learned and hopefully our audience have learned. Why is so important just to communicate and to hear other perspectives? There's a lot to learn by just listening.
Yes.
I've been told many times in my life, listening is one of the hardest skills. We tend to want to talk too damn much and not listen enough.
Yeah.
Did your family support you going out on your own and being an entrepreneur? Did they support that?
My mom didn't, but my dad did because he believed in you own your own stuff, don't work for anybody. But my mother, she was like, no, you need to go to school, get a job so you can have security. That was her mindset. My dad believed in risk it all if you want to work for it. He didn't care about spending his last to invest in yourself. He believed in that. And my mother just thought that was crazy. And he came back into our life when I was about 11. And I was trying to focus on what did I want to do when I grew up? I didn't know. All I know is that I wanted to make people happy. I love to see people smile and make people happy. So when my dad would come get me and take me to his restaurants, I would just watch how people would just look at him and be so happy when they would eat. And I'm like, man. So he would do this stuff because my dad was just like this over the top guy. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So I started to go home and I would start to cook. And I didn't learn how to ride a bike until I became an adult. And my sister and brother would be outside. I would be in the house teaching myself how to cook, watching my grandmother, watching my aunt, watching my mother. And so one day at 13, I asked family to come over. I asked my mom, could I cook a meal for everybody and call people over like we were having Thanksgiving? She said, yes. So the family came over. I cooked a spread like it was Thanksgiving. And they couldn't believe it. They thought my mom did it. My mom said, no, this was her. So I told my dad, can I start working for you on the weekend? He said, okay. So my dad wanted me to work up front with the register because he didn't trust anybody with his money. He said, you going to watch my money? I said, no, Dad, I want to work in the kitchen. No, you work up front and you watch my money. So what I would do is when he would leave, I would bring one of the cooks up front to ring the register and I would go in the kitchen cooking. So I did that for the longest until one day he came back. And he caught me. Uh-huh. Oh my God. He went off on me so bad. He said, I told you to get up front and watch my money. I said, Daddy, I don't want to do that. That doesn't make me happy. I said, what makes me happy is cooking, because my dad was making at $9,000 to $10,000 a day at the restaurant. So it was traffic all the time. It was busy. And he said, you cannot handle that. And everybody in the kitchen was so scared to speak up. I'm like, y'all tell him. They was like, So I said, Daddy, please just give me a try. He said, okay. He said, get back there and let me see what you can do. He said that in front of customers and everything.
So why do you think, Chef Jojo, that your dad didn't want you to be a cook?
In his mind, he would think that you watch your money and you run everybody else because you're the owner. You don't get in the kitchen and cook. You manage everything. I wanted to know everything. I knew how to run the front of the house, but I wanted to know how to run the back of the house.
Stop right there, because that is real, real important what you just said.
Yes.
Because I agree totally. In order to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to know everybody else's job.
That's right.
And you have to be able to do it, in most cases, better than they do it.
That's right.
So I really admire you for saying that, and I hope my listeners are hearing this, that most successful entrepreneurs take the time to learn, and they work very hard at learning every aspect of their business, not just one part. So what would you say if I said, what was three really important lessons? As a matter of fact, I was teaching just the other night, and I always start and end with a video. So I ended the video with Daddy's Lessons by that Beyonce wrote for me. What was some of your daddy's lessons?
His lessons was to believe in yourself, to bet on yourself, to do for yourself. And he taught me to never give up and to laugh in the face of adversity. Because one thing that my dad would do, I saw him go through so much. But no matter what it was, he would always laugh. It could have been him closing up a business and he's laughing. And I'm like, Dad, why do you laugh? He said, because it's too much energy to put into getting upset and getting stressed out. So he said, laughing is the best medicine to get through any situation. So he taught us to keep going no matter what. And the number one thing that he taught us was to never fall in love with things. And because his thing was with restaurants, never fall in love with a building. Because once you got it up there in your mind and you know everything, you can always get another building, but they can never take the knowledge that you have.
Well, knowledge is power. Yeah. And we say that over and over here at Matthew Knowles Impact, the importance of knowledge.
Yeah.
We often sometimes get education and knowledge confused.
That's right.
But knowledge is critical. Especially in as an entrepreneur. So
yes.
What are some of the lessons you've learned being an entrepreneur?
Oh, man. To knowing that to run your own race and to trust the process and know that it's not going to be easy and stuff doesn't happen overnight. And what is for you is for you. And you're going to get what you put in, not what you wish for, but the actions that you put behind what you wish for. You have to learn that the process is going to be ups and downs. And when I realized that the end is promised, I just have to go through the middle stuff And that's what I did. Those are the lessons that I learned to never give up on the process, because you're going to reach that end if you never give up on that process.
And I think it's important. We often talk about our successes. I think it's also important that folks understand some of our mistakes, some of our failures, but more importantly, what did we learn from those? So share with us some of the things that maybe you didn't do quite right in the beginning that you learned.
First restaurant I had when I turned, I was 18 and a half, 19. I did the lease and I was I was connected to a hotel. But what I didn't do is I signed the lease and it was time to renew. And I told him that I'm getting ready to update some stuff. And I just wanted to make sure that I'll get another 10 years. I took his word for it. And he said, go ahead and put the money in that you're going to put in to redo it. And I'm going to give you another 10-year lease. And I put in another $25,000 in the restaurant. And my lease was up, but I was due to sign it in a week, the renewal. He sold the building. So
the lesson was you didn't have it in writing.
That's right. Didn't have it in writing. Everything has to be in writing. Everything.
Did you have an attorney? Because I'm listening to a 18-year-old negotiating with a hotel to have a restaurant next door at 18.
And that's right.
And I'm saying, how could an 18-year-old negotiate that?
That's right.
And you did that on your own?
On my own, because my dad, he taught me all that stuff at 16 when I ran all of his restaurants. And he wouldn't go in there with me. He said, you got to do it on your own. That's yours. But what I learned was that I should have had an attorney. He ran circles around me on that lease. Before I put money in there, I should have gotten it in writing that even when you sold the building, that I would still have a lease. He didn't care about me. He was just caring about the money he was making when he sold his hotel.
I teach entrepreneurship at a university level. I talk about the who, the what, the why. I like to keep entrepreneurship very, very simple. So I'm going to ask you, who is your customer?
My customer is anybody that loves to cook and that wants to know how to cook. And anybody that loves food. It transcends race because that's what I believe food is. Food is such a great energy that it doesn't matter about your race or your male or female, child or adult. Everybody loves to eat. So my customer is all the people who love food and who loves to cook and who's trying to learn how to cook.
That's the who.
Yes.
And then the what. What is your product and what differentiates you from others?
Well, what I did was my seasoning shortens the cooking process. So what I did, instead of you having five or six different seasoning to season one thing, I cut that process down and I put everything into one bottle or to one bag. So it will shorten the cooking process for you.
You know, a lot of ladies has got their pens out right now because they're like, wait, this is going to shorten the process. I want to know.
Yes,
tell
but
us
it
more
doesn't
about
take away the flavor, but it shortens the process.
Wow.
Yes.
That's important.
Yes.
And then the who, the what, and the why. Why should people buy your product?
Because of the what's behind it, the love and legacy. The product that I have is made from love, but it was created from a legacy from over 60 years ago where it started with my father. That is the focal of the seasoning, love and legacy. That's all I say is love and legacy. When you get the seasoning and you open it up, I want you to feel a burst of love. And then I want you to feel the legacy that's behind the seasoning.
So often a lot of businesses go out of business because access and not having access to capital.
That's right.
They don't have the money.
That's right.
Did that happen to you? Was it difficult
yes.
for you to have the financing that you need? And I'll just jump right into what I want to say here.
Yeah.
As a Black woman, was it difficult for you to get the type of loans, the type of monies that you needed as a startup?
Yes, I didn't. And this is the thing. The money that I had for my business didn't come from loans. It came from friends and family. Because it didn't matter how good my credit was or how great the stores were doing. It was hard for me to get a business loan. And then on top of that, it was, you know, the stigma that's on restaurants. Oh, restaurants are kind of shaky to invest in. So I would always hit that brick wall. So, but I didn't let that stop me. They would think I was crazy. Because I would keep going. They keep saying, no, no, no. I say, okay, well, I'll find another way. Then I'll do something else. And I was able to get finances through friends, family, investors. And that's how I continued to open my business because I wasn't going to let the denial from banks define who I am and my destiny. That wasn't stopping me at all.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't want to go off topic here, but we talk about racism a lot yes. on the show.
Yes.
And when you start looking at all the many, many tentacles of racism, why would it be any different at a bank? If you had a racist loan officer, he's going to be tough on you.
That's right.
And I always say, you know, the people that I know that are entrepreneurs, they don't, the word credit, I heard you say credit.
That's right.
It's really about a business plan.
That's right.
But I've found it's easier to get $100,000 than it is to go to the bank and borrow $10,000 because you have to go through that process. And that process sometimes is just for people of color.
Right.
I'll be very honest with
yeah.
you. I know some people like, there he goes again. Well, it's the damn truth. I've been in business for over 30 years, and I know it to be a fact that it's sometimes harder for us to get loans and to start up our businesses as it is our white counterparts. That's just a fact.
That's right.
What happened that you closed your restaurants?
Well, when I closed my restaurants over 9 years ago, and that was when my father had a heart attack and stroke. And it was like I lost the joy. And I told my husband, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore. And he was like, well, you got to keep going because that's what your dad would want. And I still didn't want to do that. I said, no. And we were just like all businesses, you have your ups and downs. And at that time, we were at the down season. So I was like, hey, we're going through it anyway. I don't want to deal with it anymore. And we were already deciding if we were going to move to Atlanta because I had some business opportunities here with my clients. So we had been toying with that for years. And I said, listen, I'm closing the restaurants and we're moving to Atlanta. And my husband was like, well, you know, if whatever you want to do, that's fine, because my kids were getting up in age, they're getting ready to go to college and they were going to schools in Atlanta. So it just made sense to me. And so my father woke up out the coma 30 days later. And he said, I told him what I wanted to do. He said, well, if you feel like you don't want to do it no more, what did I always teach you? Never fall in love with a building. You JoJo. You can always create another JoJo's. So do what you feel you want to do.
What a beautiful story. You know, it's a lot of life lessons inside of that. You know, we often in life, Chef JoJo, it's important that our listeners hear this. As you get older and as you experience life more, this will happen to many of you, where your passions will change. Somewhere in life, you just don't want to do it anymore. You've lost that fire, or you've had the success And you've already been to the mountaintop with your success, and you don't want to start back over again and do it again. Open another restaurant, get another new artist and manage or put on the record label. You've already done that. What I admire about you is that you took that skill that you had learned, and I call it transitional skill set, and then you open another business. You're still somewhat in the food business, not somewhat, you are in the food business. You just looked at doing it a different way after that fire and that passion left you. And so I just think it's important that our listeners know it's okay if in life you get burned out and you have to reassess and redefine what your passions are. And that will happen to most of us in life. So I thank you for sharing. I want to ask, because when I look at your bio, and it talks about that you really work hard on raising awareness for bullying. Now I understand why. Mental health challenges and cancer. I want to talk about those two things. Why mental health challenges and why cancer?
Well, mental health challenges started when my father was, when he was in his coma and he came out of his coma. After his coma, he lived for 3 years. And what I thought was normal in my father, that all of my siblings, we thought was normal, we found out through his healing process that his personality was not normal. Because my father would always just scream and curse and fuss and cuss everybody out. And we just like, that's his personality. He's normal. But when we found out that the doctor was like, that's not a normal personality, because she would call me and say, your dad is cursing everybody out. I said, oh no, that's what he does. She said, that's not normal. And I'm like, huh? Well, that's normal to us. So then when we got my father started to get him some help, we found out that he was living with depression and he had some mental challenges that he never dealt with. And so I dealt with a battle of depression. And I tell people all the time, it's okay to go and talk to somebody. And one thing that my counselor told me is, you don't need me all the time. Just call me when you need the tune-up. And so that's what I do. Whenever I feel I need that tune-up, then I call my counselor. And people have to understand, it's okay. Because we are going to go through that because we are human. We're going to go through different emotions and it's okay. The problem is when you don't get the help, but when you get the help, yes, when you get the help, you will see a big difference.
I can relate to that because I had to get a tune up. I like how you said that, and call my therapist. I hadn't spoken with him in years, but when the beginning of the coronavirus, I had this immense amount of fear that I was going to die from the coronavirus. So I can certainly relate to that. And I love the words that you share, because as Black and brown people, we often feel embarrassed to talk about these mental health issues. And they're very important that we do talk, because the more people hear that a lot of people are going through this, then they'll begin to say, hey, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with me that I want to go and talk to someone else about some of my challenges. That's the key. You have cancer. Why did you have cancer?
My mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And this woman was, if she was 48, when she got diagnosed, she did not tell us until she was in remission, because she didn't want us to worry. And she went through chemo and radiation by herself and with nobody knowing. And so when the doctor told her that she would have to have surgery to get her lymph nodes out, that's when she told us, and she was in remission at that time. And she had went through that for a whole year. by herself. So I had a scare in my early 30s, and I had a lump in my breast. And so when I went to the doctor, they said, hey, it might be cancerous. We have to do a biopsy. So did the biopsy and it came back cancer free. So I am a big on making sure not just women, but men on a yearly basis that on, because with me, I have to go every year for mammograms and not just the breast, but it's the colon, it's the prostate. We have to get those things checked on the yearly or the every 2 years. We have to do that in our community because that's what we, my father could have lived long if he would have put his health first. He didn't go to the doctor. And that's the one thing that I want to push that stigma out of our culture. It's okay to go to the doctor because if you catch this stuff early, you can fix it.
Absolutely. And you're listening and you're talking to a cancer survivor. I am. And I just, as you were talking, again, as we are beginning to wrap up this season, I guess 50% of every woman, maybe more, that we've talked to, even on this episode, Isabel, another breast cancer survivor, and then you share your family history of breast cancer and early detection. I'm sure and hopeful by now, our listeners, this is not just happenstance that this keeps happening. This is not planned that we call on people and say, oh, tell us about your cancer. This is just showing how prevalent, how important that it is that we early detection, that we understand the value of early detection. And I'm going to even ask you, Chef JoJo, what I've learned through my challenge is that genetic testing. So have you done genetic testing?
I actually just got that done last month and mine came back great. So I told my sister, I said, hey, that mine was negative. And I was worried about it because my great aunt died in her 30s of ovarian cancer. Then my other great aunt, which was her sister, had breast cancer. And that's my mom's dad's siblings. And my grandfather died of lung cancer. So I was really nervous. So, of course, because of that history in my family, I was a candidate to get that done. And I just got that done 30 days ago, and the results came back negative that I don't have that gene. But I told my sister, you have to get it done, too. And that's so important.
And I just want, again, for those of you who maybe don't know what we're talking about, genetic testing has become more and more in the forefront of diagnosis. When you look at cancer and you look at also cardiovascular disease. And it's a simple saliva test that can be mailed to your home. Most insurance cover it. And if not, I think it's only like $200 to $250 to save your life. Let me think about that. $250 to possibly save my life. But you can get this genetic testing and it can tell you your probability. It doesn't say, yes, one day you're going to have cancer. Or, yes, one day you're going to have heart disease. What it says is that the probability is greater or less for you in those areas. And don't we want to know that? Because if we know that we have a higher probability, that's when we make lifestyle changes. So I want to wrap up. I want to again thank you. I do want to end with a couple of last questions. What would you like to leave the audience with if someone's thinking about owning their own business? What are some of the things they need to be aware of?
First of all, you have to find your passion. And what is it that makes you happy? What is it that you will do for free? that just makes you happy that nobody has to pay you for. And know that during this thing that we call entrepreneurship, you're going to go through every emotion possible that's known to man. You're going to go through sadness, happiness, fear, depression, everything. But it's okay. That's a part of the process. And the one thing that I live by is a quote by Bob Proctor, is that you have to be like a postage stamp, that you have to stick to it until you get to your destination. So that's what I would want to leave people, to never give up and stick to it, no matter how hard it gets, until you get to that destination.
So it's not always the journey. No. Sometimes it's the destination.
That's right.
And by the way, thank you for sending me the seasoning. Boy, I tell you, my wife used that right away. There's some meatballs that I love. Oh. They're and meatless meatballs. And she, man, it brought those meatballs to life.
Oh, great.
So I just want to thank you. And would you please send us another package, care package, please?
Yes, I will. Definitely, I will. I will.
But tell us about this kids product that you have coming out.
The kids seasoning. I am the pioneer of this kids seasoning, the first to ever create a kids seasoning. And I did that because I have six kids and my six kids are older now. I have three in college right now. But when they were little, they would always want to cook in the kitchen with me and they would always take my seasoning. So I'm like, man, I need to come up with something that mimics the adult line, but for kids in a fun package for them. So that's what I did. And kids are, my niece is the face of it now because my kids are older. And so it's called the Hannah J Collection. And it mimics the adult line. So everything that we have, they have too, but it's in a fun packaging for the kids.
Thank you so much, Chef JoJo.
It was an honor. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on Matthew Knowles Impact.
Thank you.
All the blessings to you.
Same to you.
Blue Moon is on a mission to bring some brightness to your life and break up the repetitiveness. From its refreshing flavor with Valencia orange peel to a subtle sweetness and hints of coriander, Blue Moon Belgian White is a one-of-a-kind beer. It's a full-flavored beer with refreshing notes and is best served in a glass with a signature orange garnish to showcase its beautiful hazy color. Did you know that the name stuck after a satisfied taster said, "A beer this good only comes around once in a blue moon"? I'm really looking forward to trying Blue Moon's latest brew, Blue Moon Light Sky, a light and refreshing wheat beer brewed with real tangerine peel for a lighter, exceptional taste at only 95 calories. And 3.6 grams of carbs per 12 ounce. Reach for a Blue Moon when you're in a need for some added brightness. Get Blue Moon and Light Sky delivered by visiting get.bluemoonbeer.com. To see your delivery options, Blue Moon, taste brightness. Celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado, L.
Hey, yo, listen, I don't know if y'all know this, but this is the biggest back-to-school year ever. It's a fresh start to prepare them for their success back in the classroom and beyond.
This is so exciting, and I feel like it's exciting for me because I get to go and shop. And listen, Kohl's has what you need to kick off the school year right and let your kids roll back into the class with confidence with the perfect first day of school outfits and beyond. Kohl's has the must-have school items like the most awesome backpacks, the coolest jeans, and the trendiest shoes, plus brands that the kids love for a great value that you, mom and dad, will appreciate, like Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour.
Kohl's makes shopping fast with free in-store pickup. Order online and pick up in stores in less than an hour. Kick off a great school year at Kohl's.
Look, staying healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. During our lowest prices of the season, the new Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 Smart Bed is only $899, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Boy, I tell you, this season is coming to a quick end. I've had an amazing time. We have one more episode after this one, and then there's some great information we'll share. But before we leave today, you heard some two amazing women from two different opposite ends of the world. But life brought them both together in different ways. It brought them together in their passion. It brought them together in their entrepreneurship. It brought them together in their experiences, in their childhood experiences, how their mother and their father influenced them. We can call this daddy lessons and mommy lessons. But our parents play a major role. And most of you are parents. Know that you play an amazing, important, fundamental role in your child's development. And so when we talk about entrepreneurship and we leave today, just know it's the who, the what, the why. Who is my customer? What is my product? And why should you buy it? I'm Matthew Knowles, and this is Matthew Knowles Impact. Until next week, I'm out. Thanks for listening. Matthew Knowles Impact is all about building bridges and tearing down walls. So thank you. Thank you for being a part of this mission. You can learn more about me, how to book me to speak at your next event by going to MatthewKnowles.com. Then getting simpler than that. And you can follow me on social media by going to @MrMatthewKnowles. Let's stay connected. Matthew Knowles Impact is a production of iHeartRadio and Music World Entertainment Corporation. Produced by Tamika Campbell, produced and edited by Marcy DePina and Ramsey Yunt. Our executive producer is Tyler Klain, and of course, myself. I'd like to thank my team at Music World Entertainment, Lynn Almanza and Ashton Shields. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm out. The 2021 Ford Bronco Sport is built for the next generation of adventure seekers. This 4x4 is compatible with any and every trip. Its features include 7 available GOAT modes to go over any type of terrain. It's also available with trail control and twin clutch rear drive unit to help get where you need to go. Head over to Ford.com to build and price your Ford Bronco Sport today. Built wow, built Ford proud. Looking for timely news coverage? Peacock's got it. Check out Peacock's original series, The Mehdi Hasan Show and Zerlina, streaming daily on the Choice Channel. Journalists Mehdi Hasan and Zerlina Maxwell go beyond the headlines with interviews and in-depth reporting, and with curated always-on channels. Peacock gives you instant information on the top stories in news, sports, entertainment, and more. For all this coverage and more, go to peacocktv.com to sign up today.